You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my mom and co-host, Caroline Coburn.
On this beautiful, beautiful June day. What is so rare as a day in June?
Especially at solar-powered KRUU.
Absolutely.
Our grassroots community, solar-powered, volunteer, wonderful radio station.
Yes, and, to look around and the beautiful sky and clouds and no rain is wonderful.
Yeah, this is like the first day of no rain for a while. Isn't
right.
Isn't it? But everything's green.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I have family here now from Texas, Monica's brother and family. And, of course, they are just
dry
down there, terrible yeah. dry.
If we could send them some rain, we would.
We would.
Maybe we can figure out how to do that.
That would be a first. That would be marvelous.
Wouldn't it, though?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it, though? Send well, it we have a marvelous guest today.
Oh, we do.
And
oh, gosh.
Some really important information and a wonderfully written book. I'm really enjoying this book.
This book is for all people who now meditate, who are thinking of taking up transcendental meditation.
Never thought of it, but
right. It's just a really great book.
The title of the book is Transcendence, Healing and Transformation Through Transcendental Meditation by Dr. Norman E. Rosenthal, MD. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Dr. Rosenthal.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Caroline, you want to tell us a little bit about Dr. Rosenthal's
okay.
background?
Yes, he's a distinguished clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University Medical School. Dr. Rosenthal served for 20 years as a senior researcher in the National Institute of Mental Health. His research into seasonal affective disorder, SAD, and pioneering work in the use of light therapy has helped millions of people around the world, and that is an extremely important thing. This book will appeal, as we said, appeal both to newcomers who want to know the basics of this ancient technique, as well as seasoned meditators wishing to broaden their knowledge and deepen their understanding of transcendental meditation. And, you know, the thing about TM is it sounds difficult, but as we know, it's not.
That is true.
And this book breaks it down, and, you know, it's really great.
So, Dr. Rosenthal, can you just tell us a little bit about why you decided to write Transcendence?
Well, I became so passionate about the potential of TM to help such a lot of people that I thought it was really not only a duty to write the book, but also a pleasure to put out there information that I think could be so valuable to so many people.
Well, that is very important. Now, here in Fairfield, of course, where this interview is being conducted from Fairfield, Dr. Rosenthal is phoning in, although I understand you're coming to visit us soon. Is that true?
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. I have been honored to be invited to give the commencement speech to the graduating undergrads. But for anybody who wants to come and say hello in person, I also have a book signing on Friday, July 1 at 3 o'clock at the university store in the Arjuro Student Center. So anyone out there who wants to come and say hello and have me sign a copy of the book, please drop by and say hi.
We will. I will plan on doing that.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's great.
So, but as I was saying, here in Fairfield, people who are involved with transcendental meditation, many of them have been involved for so many years, and we sometimes kind of forget that not everybody has the same knowledge about it that the people here in Fairfield do, you know, the same background, the same knowledge. And we also tend to forget that TM can be useful and valuable for people out in the world. You don't have to be living in Fairfield and going to the domes and really having your whole life sort of centered around transcendental meditation, that it can be just as valuable for someone who's just using it 20 minutes twice a day and that's it.
Well, I think they forget the potential of
yes.
it.
Yes, yeah, because we're so accustomed
I to it. I
want
to completely agree, and what I've heard from people is firstly from people who are long-time meditators, they say, really, this is the best thing we've read in a long time. It's all here in one place. Or they say, wow, I learned something even after all these years. It's amazing you can actually learn something new. From people who used to meditate and then stopped, I've heard, wow, I'm going to start up again, or they actually start. And then best of all, it's from people who never really thought of meditating, but after reading the book say, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. Why not? It's so compelling, everything that's there, that, you know, it just makes sense to try it and do it. So from all these levels of people at different levels of knowledge, I've gotten such nice feedback that it's made me feel like it was the right thing to write the book, because it's hit a sort of responsive note in many different kinds of people.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. And I've been, you know, I learned to meditate as a teenager when my father was becoming interested in it. And, of course, when you're a teenager, you don't necessarily want to be doing what your dad is doing. So I didn't stick with it at that point. And then I came back to it many years later for a variety of reasons and have been meditating regularly for probably about 15 years now. But not as regularly as some people do. And I found the book very inspiring and kind of confirming some of my own experience, as well as making me realize how important this technique has been to my life and my development and my well-being.
And you didn't even realize it,
and
did
I didn't. I did on some level, but I realize it a lot more cohesively now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. You know, they say you only really understand something when you try and teach it to somebody else, because then you have to really find all the right words to make it make sense. So I'm so happy that somebody with as much experience as yourself found something of value here.
Well, Dr. Rosenthal, why don't you tell the story of what brought you to TM?
Well, it's really a curious story, because I have a general psychiatric practice, and as part of the practice, I was lucky enough to be treating a young man, and he has bipolar disorder, and he had started to meditate, and of course I gave him all the normal treatments for bipolar, you know, the medicines and things which you need to give, but he said, you know, it doesn't really make me happy. And then he started to meditate and he said, you know, this has made the key difference. Now I'm happy 90% of the time. And I said, oh, well, you know, I meditated back in the 70s after the Beatles had gone to see Maharishi and Rishikesh, and then I just kind of left it because I was kind of busy. And, you know, the other thing is, I really, you know, sometimes somebody can give you a great gift and you don't really know what a great gift it is. So you just kind of leave it lying by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it was with me in meditation. I just kind of left it. And, I was lucky enough that I came across this opportunity, really, to start my meditation up again. And he encouraged me. And then I started, but I wasn't doing it regularly. And again, he said, you know, you're not going to get the results if you don't do it regularly. And he was right. And then I'm going to read to you in a little while how it's made a difference in my own personal life, because that gives one an insight into how it can work its amazing medical benefits, quite aside from its psychological benefits.
Now, Dr. Rosenthal, I was really interested. I mean, your intro talks about your research with seasonal affective disorder, but you actually sort of discovered this as a specific disorder. Is that true?
That is true. You know, before my colleagues and I came along and described it, there was no such a thing as seasonal affective disorder. You know, I gave it its name when I recognized it, and we defined the syndrome, and then we went on to figure out a way of treating it with bright light. And a lot of people were very skeptical at the time. They thought this was kind of a wild and strange and a little bit weird thing. And, you know, I just knew there was something there. Once you see something as a clinical phenomenon, you see it, somebody transformed in front of your eyes,
mm-hmm.
so what you see is real. And I knew it was just going to be a matter of time before others recognized that too. And indeed, that's what's happened. It's sort of widely accepted that it is a completely legitimate and rather common condition, and that the light therapy is highly effective. And I've got a bit of a deja vu here with the TM because...
I was wondering about that.
Yes, I do, because here again, I think a lot of doctors or psychiatrists or whoever out there might think, well, this is all good and well, he says it does blah, 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 but, you know, everybody says everything does everything, and this is just one more little sound in the whole noise of the universe.
Yeah, there's
well, I don't think so. I think this is not just a little noise in the universe. I think this TM is going to really be highly helpful to many people with many different kinds of conditions. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of staking my, well, I can't say my reputation, because if I'm wrong, you know, I don't think they're going to drum me out of town. But I don't think I'm going to be wrong. I think that it's going to turn out to be a very wonderful and potent intervention for people with all kinds of problems of anxiety and anger and mood and so on and so forth. Of course, as we all know, or as everybody in Fairfield knows, you don't have to have a psychiatric problem to benefit from TM. But I'm saying so powerful is its effect that it will not only help regular folks feel calmer and happier, but I think even people with real disturbances can get some benefit from it.
Now, I do have to ask that because I've had friends who meditated and still have mental illness of some sort, and it doesn't seem to have cured them.
I think that's a really good point. I think we mustn't ask too much of TM or of anything for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to stop using medications. I'm not going to stop using psychotherapy. All these things that have been shown in research studies and with extensive clinical experience to be highly helpful are things that we obviously need to continue to do. But what I do feel is that here we have an additional player in the team, an additional tool in the toolbox, if you want.
Right,
so
right.
I think that if you've got bipolar disorder, please don't just meditate and expect that that's going to take care of everything. That's a serious illness. However, if you've got bipolar disorder and you're taking all the medicines, you're doing all the right things, you're still not feeling yourself, it's a very reasonable thing to add to the mix.
That I'm glad that you explained that, because that's
well, because
important.
The mind and the body are so complex that there are many different, and everyone reacts to medicines differently, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that in my own life. So, you know, there's no reason why you can't explore different avenues of healing. There's no reason.
Now, Dr. Rosenthal, do you think that, like, if you had written this book 20 years ago, do you think you would have had more of an uphill climb within the medical profession than...
Well,
here
is a very simple answer. 20 years ago, I could not have written the book because a lot of the data on which the book is based has come out in the last 20 years.
Ah.
Like some of the most powerful data on the cardiovascular system, the wonderful work of your own Dr. Robert Schneider and others, that really shows that TM can actually save lives, prevent heart attacks, prevent strokes, prevent these by, as I'll be reading to you, almost 50%. That is really, powerful science that people can't argue against. And so I wouldn't have had the building blocks on which to write the book. It wouldn't have had the same research base and therefore wouldn't have been as powerful.
That's a very good point. I think there's also a generally greater acceptance of meditation in general in our society than there was 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yes, I think it's true. But at the same time, I think that there's also a lot of confusion about what meditation is and the idea, you know, for example, there's a sense that all meditation is the same.
Right.
Which is not necessarily true, really. Probably not true.
Well, you know, of course, when MIU first came to, or MUM first came to Fairfield, it was unknown to people here and seemed strange and so forth. But so many people, a lot of townspeople embraced it, and my husband was one of those. And he found.
Could you talk just a little louder, please? I'm having trouble. I don't know about your listeners.
Talk louder.
Okay, sorry. Well,
she's a little further away from you than I am. So.
Okay.
Anyway, I was saying that it seemed strange that the technique, transcendental meditation, seemed strange to us in Fairfield when they first arrived. But now it's such an integral part of this community that it's not strange anymore.
Right. Well, that's great. I've just visited Fairfield once, and I thought that the atmosphere was so pleasant and peaceful. It was, I don't know whether it's the TM or just the Midwest.
Well, part of it's the Midwest.
Yeah, I think it's a little of both.
Sure.
I think so. But let's mention again for people who just tuned in that Dr. Rosenthal will be here to give the commencement address for MUM. On July, what date was that?
July 2nd, the commencement, and July 1st, Friday in the afternoon at 3 o'clock. I will be doing a book signing at the university store at the Argyro Student Center, and everybody's welcome.
Great. So, Dr. Rosenthal, I mean, you have a clinical practice, and you're a professor at Georgetown Medical School. So you must be a very busy man. How did you find
it? For the past 10 years, I've run my own clinical trials organization where I've tested various medications for depression and anxiety and all kinds of things. So, yes, I have been pretty busy.
How did you find time to write a book?
Well, I basically blocked off time. I didn't see any new patients. I'm winding down my business. I made time because, in my opinion, you know, when something is really important, it's important to give that priority. And time is not going to just open up. It's like water in an ocean or water in a lake. It just will kind of come and fill up any hole that's there. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so you actually have to get a boat and put the boat in the lake.
That's
and
right.
That's what I did. I blocked some time, and I just made it my business. You know, one thing that meditation does, it helps you become more effective. It helps you, or it certainly helped me, set my priorities. And in fact, I wrote this book more quickly and efficiently than any book that I've written before.
What are some of the books you've written before?
One of the best known is my popular book on seasonal affective disorder called The Winter Blues. That's been in publication. It's been available for the last 22 years, and I keep updating it. So for anybody who has trouble with the winter, that's a good book. Mm-hmm. Then I wrote a book all about the science of emotions. People who wanted to find out more about how we work, how we tick emotionally. It was called The Emotional Revolution. And I got fascinated in an herbal antidepressant called St. John's Wort, and I wrote a book on that. And finally, I wrote a book on how to beat jet lag using strategically timed light and dark. So those are my five books.
Fascinating. Go ahead.
I'm sure the one on jet lag was extremely popular because so many people that that have to travel a lot certainly experience that.
Yes, jet lag, it's a problematic issue. But I think transcendence, I would say, has been the most successful, at least coming out of the gate. And winter blues has been the most successful over time, selling well over 100,000 copies. And I'm now going to be revising it for its fourth edition. So, I guess I like writing.
I guess you do.
Well, I would like to see this book be required reading for MUM students in the high school, of course, in the university, because, these young people, this is the future of the country, and they need to know what it's all about.
Wow. That'll be a tough one, getting it into public schools, though. There'd be a pushback on that.
Yes. It might. But I did write to somebody in the San Francisco school district. They've done that wonderful work with a quiet time program where they've really introduced TM into the schools. And in doing so, they've taken schools that were really troubled, and they've now got these students learning much, much more successfully. And, for anybody who understands about TM, it's not surprising because these people are coming into school, these students are coming into school in a state of post-traumatic stress disorder. So the TM is helping them settle down, because a stressed child is not going to be able to learn.
No.
So I wrote to one of the people who had helped me put the chapter. I've got a chapter in my book on schools. It's called An Island of Safety in a Sea of Trouble, which is how one of these schools was described. And I said, would you like me to send you a copy? He said, oh, we're buying copies for the entire faculty as a development tool for the faculty. Well, it made me feel really good, because it's finding uses in different places. So I would love to see school children be able to read it, college students be able to read it. I wrote it so that it would be useful for people at a whole variety of different positions. And I also wrote it, although I've got a lot of the complicated science, I've stuck it all at the back in the end notes so that it doesn't kind of block anybody's enjoyment. But I wrote it to be really accessible and enjoyable to read and to listen to.
Well, you're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and if you've just tuned in, our guest today is Dr. Norman Rosenthal, the author of Transcendence, Healing and Transformation Through Transcendental Meditation. And it is true that this book, you use so many kind of case histories and stories, anecdotes, that really keep the reader's interest. And I think the best books are really always are building on story, that story's at the root of anything. Even when you're trying to teach something scientific or something that might be considered boring or serious, that there's no better way to do it than through story.
Well, I was interested.
So because I remember every time I asked people what they enjoyed the most about my books, they said the stories.
Uh-huh.
So I figured that when I wrote Transcendence, there would be a lot of stories in it. And I love the stories myself. I love the people I interviewed. They were so interesting, and they were so generous to share their personal experiences with me.
Well, the armed services personnel that you interviewed coming back from the war in Iraq, and that was, these persons have seen so much horror, and they can't help but be affected by it. And if they can be helped in any way besides just drugs, if they can be helped in, to reestablish their lives, because they didn't learn to be soldiers in a day, and they can't learn to be civilians in a day either, but it takes time. But they have so many talk about stress, it's unbelievable what they've been through. So I was really, really pleased to read those accounts of the soldiers that were helped.
Yes, they were quite dramatic. We did a study of five veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who had post-traumatic stress disorder, also known as PTSD. That's where they are hypervigilant and they're having flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
One of these young men had been in an explosive situation. He was driving a Humvee, which is this, like an old Jeep, but the updated version. So he's driving a Humvee, and they went over a bomb, essentially, an IED, improvised explosive device. And there was an explosion, and people were injured, and, you know, he kind of got numb after that. But when he came back to the States, every time he would be driving on the streets of Washington and go over a pothole, he would have a flashback to that explosion and have his heart would pound and sweat.
Oh, golly.
And it was as though he was right back in Iraq all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And TM made a huge difference for him?
Oh, yes. He had been drinking too much vodka to try and settle down his nervous system, and TM totally helped him and helped his relationship with his girlfriend, which, you know, these people with PTSD, it affects their families as well as themselves.
Of course.
Definitely. Of course. How did you find all the people that you interviewed for this book?
Well, I got a lot of help from my friends in the movement. They directed me to this one and that one, and people, of course, were, you know, extremely kind. I mean, some of them, you know, some really marvelous stories, like there was one person with a history of multiple addictions who had become an addiction counselor. So he has profound insight into the whole process of addiction and how TM totally helped him with really terrible addictions. So that was a person I found through the movement, as well as some of the celebrities who have shared their stories. I wanted to show that anybody can benefit. You could be a prisoner, or you could be a veteran, or you could be a movie star, and you could still benefit, that it has the capacity to help the entire sweep of humanity.
And some of the people that you interviewed have been meditating for a long time, but some of them are quite recent meditators.
Yes, some of them are quite recent, including myself.
Including yourself and Martin Scorsese, is that how you pronounce his name?
Scorsese.
I was
Scorsese. Yes.
Scorsese. Yes. I was interested in his story because he came to. It sounds like he came to TM fairly recently, but it's really made a difference for him.
Oh, it's made a huge difference. It's sort of settled down his nervous system, and it's just really been a totally better experience.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, he talks in the story. He's talking about having panic attacks and
panic attacks while he was directing his recent movie, Shutter Island. He could barely get out of the room, but he would meditate and it would settle him down, and then he'd be able to get up and get out of the room.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, Dr. Rosenthal, would you like to read something from Transcendence for
us? Oh, I would love to read something. Let's find one or two pieces that might be interesting. This is from a section, Decompression, Managing Toxic Stress. And I start with a quote by the expert Hans Selye, which says, "It is not stress that kills us, it is our reaction to it."
Mm-hmm.
When I was a child, my family and I would often visit Kruger National Park, one of the world's great game reserves. The Kruger was recently the setting for a mesmerizing video shot by a lucky tourist who put it on YouTube, where it went viral. Called Battle at Kruger, the video shows a herd of buffalo ambling along beside a waterhole, unaware that directly ahead, several lions are crouching in the tall grass. The ambush is set. Then you see the moment when the lead buffalo catches the scent of the lions and pivots, directing the herd to turn on their heels and flee. A group of lions manages to separate a baby buffalo from the herd, and in a cluster, they fall into the water. The lions are trying to pull the calf back onto solid ground when, all of a sudden, a crocodile lunges up from the water and grabs the calf from the other side. A tug of war ensues. Meanwhile, the buffalo confer, regroup, and come charging back to save their calf and rout the lions. In one riveting scene, a bull buffalo flings a lion into the air with a point of one horn. The lions flee, and the calf, by some miracle still alive, is reunited with a herd. The whole drama lasts just 8 minutes.
Oh, gosh.
This vignette demonstrates how the stress response has evolved over millions of years to work in animals, including humans. A threat is perceived, which triggers a complex set of coordinated responses, physical, hormonal, and emotional. In the wild, the options are flight, the buffalo run away at first, fight, they charge back once they have assessed the situation, or fright, the calf freezes until it can be saved. If you are lucky, the stress response helps keep you alive. So that is an example of how the stress response ought to work. It ought to have a, it ought to be like a short story. It ought to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it ought to be short. In our lives that we live in modern times, and now I'm talking, I'm not reading, we have this grinding stress that goes day after day, and that is not what it was meant to be, and that is why it injures our arteries, our hearts, our various organs. And that's what TM is so helpful in doing. If I might just say, because here I'm trying to explain how TM has actually been shown to have such a huge beneficial effect in cardiac functioning and other kinds of functioning. In a section called, So What's the Secret?, I say, on the face of it, the data seem amazing. How can sitting with your eyes closed and repeating a mantra twice a day cut your risk of serious disease by half? I would be even more amazed, however, had I not myself been meditating for the past several years. The data require explanation, but first a personal perspective. I often take walks in my neighborhood, where it is a great pleasure to watch the changing seasons, greet familiar neighbors, and watch the wildlife that somehow seem to flourish on the outskirts of the city. But every now and then, cars come whizzing by as though the narrow lanes were racetracks or they were being chased by the police. That is how many of us lead our lives, rushing here and there, gunning our motors and keeping our internal pedals on the metal, regardless of whether there is an emergency or not. The motor in question is our sympathetic nervous system. The gas is the flood of epinephrine, norepinephrine, and corticosteroids. The result is internal stress, of which elevated blood pressure is just one outcome. When we let up on the pedal, these stress hormones no longer course through our system in such profusion. This conclusion is supported by a recent controlled study of almost 300 college students from the Washington, D.C. area by Schneider and colleagues from American University. In the TM group, improvements in stress level and emotional coping correlate significantly with improvements in the systolic blood pressure. From a personal point of view, since starting to meditate, I gun my motor less. When that vague sense of urgency rises up in me demanding action, I am more apt to think, am I really in such a hurry? Why not enjoy the moment? In the same way, while I've never been what you'd call an angry man, I might get too easily riled up if someone offended, cheated, or harmed me. Sure, some anger is okay. I still don't like it when these things happen. But I used to allow myself to ruminate for too long on the injury. Today, if such a train of thought starts up, it just tends to disappear. I always knew I should just let it go and told myself so, but it was easier said than done. Now the angry thoughts just seem to evaporate. My attention drifts to something more enjoyable. Likewise, I have long known, as I'm sure many of you do, the famous serenity prayer, which asks for the serenity to accept the things we cannot change. Again, easier said than done. Since I've started to meditate, however, it's been far easier to follow this advice. All in all, it is clear to me that somehow my regular TM practice has reprogrammed my autonomic nervous system and thereby transformed the emotional tone of my life. Noticing this pervasive shift helps me imagine how, over time, calming the sympathetic nervous system could make a big difference in the wear and tear on all its target organs, including the heart and blood vessels.
If you've just tuned in, this is Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Dr. Norman Rosenthal, the author of Transcendence, Healing and Transformation Through Transcendental Meditation. Dr. Rosenthal will be having a book signing at the MUM bookstore in the Argyro Center on July 1st at 3 p.m. here in Fairfield, and everyone is welcome. And if someone is outside of Fairfield and wants more information, Dr. Rosenthal, is there where would you direct them?
There is definitely a way to get it. By all means, you can go straight to my website, which is normanrosenthal.com. I also encourage you to look at my professional Facebook page, facebook.com/Norman Rosenthal, and please, by all means, follow me on Twitter at Dr. Norman, DocTorNorman. So my website, normanrosenthal.com, Facebook, or Twitter at Dr. Norman.
Now, Dr. Rosenthal, the book was published quite recently.
Yes, less than a month ago, actually.
And what's some of the feedback and results that you've gotten from the media and so forth?
It's been so rewarding. Thank you for asking. It's been so rewarding. It was on the bestsellers list on the New York Times bestseller list this past Sunday. It's also been on the Washington Post and Publishers Weekly bestseller list.
Congratulations.
Thank you, thank you. I have 25-star reviews on Amazon, but it's always lovely to hear what people have to say, so don't let that deter anybody if they want to give a review. It's always good, but that's been very nice to hear all that. We've gotten offers from the United Kingdom and British Commonwealth. They've acquired the book, and mainland China. It's been picked up by Spirit One Book Club, which is the Book of the Month Club spiritual wing. It's going to go on to audiobooks, and then lots of nice things said to me by friends old and friends new, friends that I've made through the writing process and people who've read it and have responded. So I'm just really grateful that people have responded to it, and always enjoy hearing people's thoughts.
And I understand you've been featured on CNN and ABC News and an article.
That was in the past, not around this particular book.
Okay, okay.
But I have, you know, quote, done all the national media. For some reason, we haven't this time around got it. But I think it's probably just a matter of time. Maybe the climate needs to be made ready for the subject. Maybe it's not quite there yet.
That's true. And sometimes it takes a while. We had a guest a couple weeks ago who did the movie on, or has done several documentaries on crop circles. And after years of working in it, she's suddenly getting media attention from Rosie O'Donnell show and some things like that. So
these things do come around.
They have their own time line, don't they?
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
So, Dr. Rosenthal, tell us a little bit about how this book is laid out and structured. One of the things I was really impressed by was how kind of the flow of the material, because you have a lot, like you mentioned, there's a lot of science in here. There's a great number of stories. How, when you went to organize and put it together, did you like have the outline in mind before you started, or did it kind of just
grow? I really didn't. It came to me. You know, I wanted to start on a personal note, talking about my own rediscovery of TM, because I thought it would be interesting for people to know how do I, a mainstream psychiatrist, clinical researcher, scientist, whatever, come to this particular practice and also to recommending it. So I talk about my own story back, Then the first section is called Transcendence, and of course that's the name of the book itself. And I was so fascinated because, you know, I always heard about this fourth state of consciousness, and frankly, I was highly skeptical about it. You know, I'm a kind of show me before I believe you kind of guy. And, you know, people were talking about the state of consciousness beyond waking, sleeping, and dreaming, and I thought, well, I never encountered that, so as far as I'm concerned, there are only three states of consciousness until you show me to the contrary. And then I started meditating, and sure enough, I found myself entering this transcendent state, and it was very different and very distinct from waking, sleeping, and dreaming. So the first section is all called Transcendence. It describes the transcendent state and some of the history of it and the way in which the transcendence comes into one's daily life, the so-called cosmic consciousness when transcendence enters into one's everyday life, even outside of the meditation experience, and then goes on to refined cosmic consciousness in which people actually get their perceptions become more vivid and more fine-grained and more detailed. And here again, you know, I heard all of these things, but I didn't actually believe them until I experienced them myself. And if you will permit me, I will give you just a little example that happened to me after I'd been meditating for a while. May I read that?
Please do.
I said, here's an example of refined cosmic consciousness, which I experienced after meditating for about a year, elicited by, of all things, a placemat. One evening after dinner, I cleared my dish and sat back down at the table, gazing at the placemat. I was in a tranquil frame of mind, probably the residue of my usual late afternoon meditation. I had purchased the placemat at an art museum in Paris, because it was embossed with Monet's water lilies, which I have always enjoyed. I had looked at the placemat hundreds of times before, so that by now it took on the familiarity of an ordinary thing that blends inconspicuously into its surroundings. Until this evening, all of a sudden, the famous picture of a lily pond appeared to me in a totally new way. I looked at the curved bridge that spans the pond and wondered at the perfection of its shape and how the artist had captured the shadows that fall across its railings. All the greenery took on a new vividness as I pondered the different textures of the plants, the cascading branches of the willow, the fronds of fern and the lily pads. The lilies themselves sparkled in the sunlight and the flecks of their petals shimmered on the surface of the water. For many minutes I gazed at this familiar household object as though I were in Monet's own gardens at Giverny on a lazy afternoon in the late summer when the days are long and it seems as though the sun will never set.
Mm. That's beautiful.
Thank you. So anyway, the first part is transcendence, and also I link it to some very basic work that my colleague did when we were at the NIH together on people sleeping for long nights and how they wake up in the middle of a long night of sleep in a transcendent state. But it's too complicated to go into, but it's very, very fascinating. And it's one situation in the natural world in which transcendence reliably occurs. Otherwise, you don't usually get much of it because of the way we live our modern lives. Then I go on to talk about decompression, and I already read a little bit about the stress response and how really TM can heal. In other words, how it can prevent or even reverse cardiovascular disease and heal in other ways physically. And then the bigger section is called transformation. And of course, as a psychiatrist, in a way, that's most interesting to me. How it can transform people with anxiety, mood disorders, attention deficit disorders and addictions, and also how it can transform children in schools, prisons, prisoners in prisons and highly successful people like the celebrities I mentioned. You know, besides celebrities, I've always been fascinated at very highly successful business people or very highly successful women. I've always marveled at how they can juggle their family responsibilities with a career and succeed in all of these ways. And so I profile a lot of these people. And I want to emphasize, when I say transform, that this TM can transform people, I don't mean make them just a little better or a little different. I mean really change them in very fundamental ways. And then the last part is called harmony, how TM people harmonize at a number of different levels, you know, within their brain, between brain and body, in groups of people, couples, and even maybe in the society itself. So transcendence, healing, transformation, and harmony are the four parts of the book.
You know, there's a lot of people in our culture, in the world, who, in the United States, who don't know anything about transcendental meditation or know of your name, but many of those people do know of Dr. Oz. And it's interesting to me that Dr. Oz wrote the foreword to your book.
Yes, yes. I know Dr. Oz for many years, and I know him to be a superb doctor, as well as, of course, a great media celebrity. He's a wonderful doctor and a wonderful human being.
I'm sure.
And I was just thrilled that he was kind enough to agree to write a very, very generous introduction. And that has been, I think, one of the attractions, because, as you say, a lot of people who may not know about TM, who may not know about me, know about Dr. Oz, and mm-hmm. he's a very trusted name
yes.
in the medical field.
Right, and admire him greatly. Have you been on his program?
No, not yet. I'm hoping that he will have me on.
Well, I'll be watching for that, because I do watch Dr. Oz.
Good.
And I take notes. I take notes on the things he has. He has such variety of helpful things on his program.
Indeed, and it's always, he makes it so much fun somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does. That's the appeal, of course. People are learning whether they realize it or not.
They're learning and they're enjoying it.
Yes.
That's the secret, if you can somehow get both of these factors in line with each other.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Writer's Voices on KRUU, and our guest today is Dr. Norman Rosenthal, author of Transcendence, Healing, and Transformation Through Transcendental Meditation. Dr. Rosenthal, one of the things I really appreciated about this book was the actual descriptions of transcendence, because it's not something that even those of us who practice TM and, you know, have these experiences, we don't really very often sit down and try and describe it. Was it difficult to find vivid descriptions? I think you did an excellent job of describing what it's like.
I got a lot of help from different people, and one person who was very helpful to me was Craig Pearson, who has compiled an amazing history of descriptions of transcendence mm-hmm. going back for over 1,000 years.
Wow.
And he was generous enough also to share some of his library research with me. So some of them come from him, but, you know, when you are writing a book, it's like you're gathering bits and pieces from everywhere that you can, and then you try and put them in together in a way that's just going to be really enjoyable to read. And so that's what I hope I've done.
And that's a real talent, to be able to do that. Now, with the concept of transcendence is not just from the East. There have also been, throughout the centuries, Western practitioners or seekers of transcendence. We have the Transcendentalists here in the United States in the, was that the 1800s, the 1700s?
Yes, the 1800s, and I do quote a couple of quotations from Thoreau, who was one of the Transcendentalist philosophers.
Mm-hmm.
It's very relevant, and but you know, the transcendence has kind of surfaced in the minds of many great thinkers, great mystics. You know, the great psychologist William James said that there are states of consciousness different from the ones that are commonly experienced, that are separated from those common experiences by the most flimsy of partitions, you know? Mm. So he was aware of this whole world out there. And I think what TM does is it provides us with this wonderful key that unlocks this world of transcendence. And it's a key that anybody can use. You just have to learn how. And you know, people have said, well, will your book teach me how to do TM? And of course, the people in Fairfield are sophisticated. They know that you have to basically be taught. You have to learn. But what I normally say is that, you know, this is not a how-to book. This is a why-to book.
Right.
I
right.
like that.
Yeah.
You know,
good.
I think that our most valuable asset is our time. And before people will devote their time to learning something or to spending 20 minutes twice a day to somebody on the rushing around in a typical East Coast lifestyle, that's like an eternity of time to devote to something.
Mm-hmm.
Before anybody's going to be willing to do that, they must be really and truly persuaded that it's worth their while.
Mm. Well, I think you've done an excellent job at that, Dr. Rosenthal.
Great.
Yeah, I, you know, my own personal experience with the what TM has done for me, is something that it's difficult to talk about sometimes because, again, it's hard to define, but I feel like it has really helped to refine my intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And to help me trust my intuition to the point where in almost every case I have almost anything that would happen now, I have the faith that I will know the right thing to do if I wait, you know, if I don't rush into it, if I don't try and overthink it. And I'm very much somebody who thinks a lot, you know, I'm mm-hmm. pretty brain centered, I'd say, in many ways. But and yet I have learned or have gradually become much more trusting of just a knowingness. And I believe that my practice of TM has contributed greatly to that.
And do you find that those intuitions are borne out, that they turn out to be correct?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And
great.
Particularly, you know, I'm a businesswoman and I'm involved in a number of successful businesses, and I use that skill, really, it's a skill, over and over again. And it helps me deal with really stressful situations without getting stressed out about it, because I just have this trust that whatever decision I eventually make will be the right decision. And so then I don't fret about, am I doing the right thing or doing the wrong thing? And I think that helps partially. One way that is effective is because even if I make the wrong decision, if I'm trusting my ability to make a decision and follow through with the decision I've made, it's going to come out okay, even if it wasn't the perfect or ideal decision.
I think, isn't that a wonderful thing to be able to say?
Absolutely, yeah.
Give you so much more confidence.
I'm incredibly fortunate. Incredibly fortunate.
And to think that a technique can help you to do that. You know, I thought to myself, you know, I might in the past have, if I felt I needed to sort something out with somebody, I might have picked up the phone and called them. And now, you know, I wait. I think about it a little bit.
Mm.
And in doing so, I have more time and I have more ability to process it. I realize when something is actually not an emergency and I don't have to treat it as such.
Mm.
That's very important.
It is. When you have a medical practice and all these other things going on, that's extremely important.
Well, Dr. Rosenthal, we look forward to seeing you here in Fairfield on July 1st and 2nd. July 1st.
Oh, I hope you'll stop by the Arjuro Center.
I'm planning to do that. And
it'll be so nice to put the face to the voice and or voices. And I will be a pleasure, and I'm so looking forward to my visit and to meeting this wonderful community that you have there, a community that is dedicated to meditating and becoming better people. I think it's fantastic.
And it's great to have someone from the outside world who recognizes the things that are important to us here, too. So we appreciate that, and thank you so much for being on Writer's Voices.
Oh, my pleasure. See you all soon. Have a great day. Enjoy that wonderful weather you're having.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, Mom, do you have some final words for us today?
I do. It is only in the present moment that you can make changes, not in the past and not in the future.
See you next week on Writer's Voices.
Bye now.
All right, I just want to mention that coming up next on Planet Earthwild, we have James Moore, and now I've forgotten what it is he asked me to say. Stay tuned for Planet Earthwild.
It's going to be good.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.